Good morning, one and all. Welcome to this session. Good to see that not everybody's still in bed after last night's party. Worried about the adrenaline rush from the speedway and all that kind of thing. So thank you for making it. Here today we're going to be talking about Charlton Collegiate Academy. And Alan will talk more, he's from the school. My role within this, just to set it up from the start, we were the partner who provided the migration. But really important that we're talking about the school, how they're using Office 365. We'll spend some time talking about the actual migration, some of the pain points that we went through, to get a bit of an understanding of what we actually really did. Just to give you a quick line, it's about terabytes worth of data, loads of hundreds, thousands of sites that we migrated. So, but for now, I'll pass over to Alan, who'll introduce himself and give you a bit of understanding of what 365 and what technology and education means to them.
Thanks, Alex. Good morning, all. I'm one of the assistant principals at the school, and I sit on the team that looks at how we integrate technology with what we do. And I want to come and talk to you a little bit about the stuff that we do today, try and give you an insight into where we are, where we've come from, a bit of our journey, what sort of population we have in the school, so that you can see where we're going. So, Charlton Collegiate Academy, it's a state school. It's a normal, very normal school. We're about 100 miles just north of London there. You can see where we are. Sorry, I'm going to stand still. See, being a teacher, I move. I've got to stand still for a while. So you can see we're about 100 miles north of London there. With our technology, we talk about our technology being mundanely clever. We make the technology work for us, and we're not dictated to it by it. So we try and find some solutions that will work and fit in with what we want to do. And so we work quite hard, and we work with people like Alex and other people within the UK to try and make sure that technology fits in with what we want to do and how we want to do it. So a little bit of context for us. We're an inner city academy in the West Midlands, just over 1,100 students. We're 11 to 18 or 19 with the odd student that stays on a bit longer. The building's over 100 years old, as you can see from the diagram there, so it's in no way, shape or form a modern building. So it brings with it its own problems for us in trying to get wireless network around the campus and stuff like that at times has proved interesting. We live in an area, or we're in an area of substantial deprivation. We're in the top 5% in the country of deprivation. So this is kind of why technology drives us, and we'll go into that in a little bit more. 38.2% of our students have eligibility for free school meals. So we have a free school meal program in the UK. And the pupil premium bit is new. If you're anything interested in the UK, they now have pupil premium. And that means they qualify if they've had free school meals any time in the last 8 years, those sorts of things. So depending on how they've been as a student. We have 22% with special needs. We have 15% life safeguarding issues at any time. So students who have had a problem at home or have some sort of problem within their life, we've got roughly 15% of our population open with that at any one time. The big figure for us, though, is the 64.7% of students that have English as a second language. And so at our last count, including dialects within our academy, there was 54 different languages spoken. So not many of them are of a first language with English. So it kind of makes our job a little bit more difficult and intricate to try and move things along. We are judged in the UK by an organisation called Ofsted, which is a government organisation. They come in, they look at us, and we're fortunate enough to be judged as outstanding in 2006, 10 and 13. So our starting point. On average, the point scores on entry are about an APS, an average point score of 25 points. And when we put that across, and I've tried to make sure I've got this right, if we take this across and they left us after 5 years, they'd come out with an average US average grade point of 2 if we left it where we were. But in general, we hit the 3.3 to 3.7 mark through the use of the technology that we have and adding stuff to the students as we go along. So we make a huge improvement with the students by allowing ourselves to use technology as one of the things we've got. So they judge us as outstanding in these three things, which I think is important for us because that's the highest accolade we can get at school. It's the highest thing that we can look at. It determines our reputation, if you like, around the UK. And so that's fantastic for us. And these are just two of the quotes that they said when they came in. They said all groups of students make rapid progress irrespective of their background or ability level. Teaching is outstanding, lessons are planned extremely well, but the important point for me down at the bottom there is the innovative use of information and computer technology. So they came in and they recognised it, and they talked to us about how good some of the stuff we do is in terms of our use of SharePoint, in terms of everything else that we do. So our journey, our key maxims, this was something that we talked about a long time ago when we were looking at SharePoint. And you'll find that we've been in SharePoint for quite a while, but we've moved it around a bit and done some things with it. So every teacher should be outstanding. Behaviour and welfare are the bedrock of our school, so it's not just about the learning of the things that you're going to take away in terms of your education. It's also about developing the person for us as well. The expectations and progress. If we don't do something truly radical, we'll never break the cycle. And in where we start, if we don't break the cycle, we'll just keep repeating it. And we'll get a transient population because we have a lot of immigration, a lot of people arriving, and we find that it's changing as we go. And we need to make maximum intervention with the students furthest away. And by that we mean we're talking about our C grade, if you like, which is what one of the focuses has been on for quite a while. And from that point of view, our gateway or our learning platform is at the heart of everything we do. So our vision then, when we started to look at Office 365, was anytime access for all. We wanted to support the 21st century learning skills, and we wanted to make sure there was progress for all. So, one of the gentlemen that we met a little while ago, my executive principal, spent some time with Anoop Gupta, and I don't know if any of you have heard of him or know of him, but he came and talked to us, and he talked to us about technology doing the heavy lifting for learning for us. And our principal's been that advocate ever since he spoke with him and he spent some time with him over in the States. So we wanted to make sure that SharePoint in Charlton Collegiate Academy was working for us. So since 2003, we've been in SharePoint. We created another 130 environments for other schools, which we managed at one point through a separate company to the school. And we then moved from 2003 to 2007 to a private cloud, and that was the point when we got rid of the other 130 different schools that we were working with. And then we moved with Alex's help here from SharePoint 2010 and 2013 with Office 365. So our original journey, back in 2003, we were the first people to set up a learning gateway in the UK. We used as the ICT test bed, and the Department for Education, the DfE, worked with us and helped to fund us and sorting that sort of stuff out and putting it all together for us. We then developed, we had another 16 schools after that, and then we moved on to 90 schools where we replicated what we did and put it out to everybody else and helped them manage it. And there was quite a lot of uptake. We then went into the private cloud where we had 130 schools. We worked on a home access project again, and then we worked with something called Shape the Future, and the three names along the bottom, Mark East, Claire Riley and Steve Bezek, are all part of the UK education team from Microsoft, and they help us out greatly with the things we try to do. We're very lucky, we're a partner school with them in the UK, so they spend a lot of time in helping us develop what we try to do and then implement it with other people. And then we've got to the stage after Office 365, as I jumped through it, I've got the plus sign. We've got schools now coming to us asking to actually buy some of our content from us. So when we talk about it a bit more, we create something called a planning bank where our teachers upload a minimum of 40% of their lessons for the week. And schools are coming and saying, can we buy just that planning bank? Can we have it? Can we take it? Can we use it? Can you put it into an environment for us where we can have access to it? So we're looking at that and seeing whether that's something we want to go down the route of. Then my principal, Sir Mark Grundy here, who could well have been here but chose to send me instead, which I'm very lucky. He says, and this was a quote I was talking about before he left, the biggest factor in school improvement will be Office 365. He is a great believer in that. For the access it's giving to our students from the Office web apps, or Office Online, to the premium edition of Office that the students get to download for free, given our deprivation, is fantastic. They don't have to buy Office anymore. It's there for them. And a lot of people will say to us, but your families won't have an internet connection. And we disagree. We say a lot of our families will at least have a smartphone. and they will have that smartphone, or they'll have Skype or something at home, because a lot of them are calling home, what they call home. You know, it could be Somalia, it could be Azerbaijan, it could be anywhere, wherever they would originate from. So they've actually got that technology already. So all we're utilizing now is their internet connection, their 3G connection or their internet connection, for the parents to get on and see things and students to get it at home. We do run a program if students are struggling with internet. We do provide them with a 3G connection, so they can take that home. It can be a dongle that they can use or anything along those lines to make sure that they have got some access. We do try to make sure that it's access for all. So, why Office 365 for us? We wanted to take back some control. We found that where it's been hosted privately, it was 24 hours before we got a new user added sometimes. It was this, it was that. It wasn't really as smooth as we needed it to be. So we wanted to take it back. We wanted to take control of it. We wanted to be able to manage it. We wanted to make use of the Office 365 online apps. The student advantage that I've already mentioned is fantastic for students to be able to take things and make use of it. We wanted the flexibility of the environment that the cloud offers. And I took the graphic here that Microsoft offer as a bit of a sales pitch. And one of our guys put that together and did some work with it. And for us, it's about low costs. If you're not aware, in the UK, I think it's the same in the rest of the world, it's offered to us for free. So it was an interesting decision. It wasn't an easy decision. We did have to play with the Office 365 on-prem or in the cloud discussion, because at the time we were changing, it wasn't free. So it was quite a big investment with whatever we were going to do. But the low costs were important. The flexibility of the environment was really important for us. I put this in. I am in no way, shape, or form a techie. So I said to the guys, right, what hardware have we got? So some of it's gobbledygook to me, I'll be really honest. But I said I'd put it up so people could see what we're running and how it's running. And I think one of the things that's the biggest thing for us, it's the amount of devices that we have and the amount of wireless that we've got in. We've got a wireless point in every classroom to make sure that we can get access. We actually find that we max out our wireless when we've got devices with the students. We're virtually one-to-one devices. We've had a mixture of mobile devices. We've used some iPads as a project. Didn't really work very well for us. We didn't find that it worked as a productivity tool for us. It was a great consumer device. It was quick to find things. But when it came to actually the outputs, we struggled. And when we were on 2007, you couldn't link the iPad very easily to SharePoint. So I know things are slightly different now. But it was something we looked at, something we decided again. So we've gone back to using laptops. We've just bought another 380 Windows 8.1 touchscreen devices. That we're rolling out to the students so that they can get the full interactive experience of the things we're doing. Many of our desktops are on Windows 8, 8.1 now, so we're making sure we're moving along. We try to make sure that everything that's in the classroom is the same. So if the staff member's PC is 8.1, all the PCs in that room are 8.1. If the staff member's PC is 7, because we haven't upgraded yet, we make sure all the PCs are 7. That's important. Otherwise, we're trying to use two different technologies at the same time for them, and they struggle. So we've got about 1,200 mobile devices that we're taking care of and looking after in there as well. I missed that one. Sorry, I was going to say the DirSync. Will it go back? Yeah. So, and Alex is going to talk about this in a moment. So we use Office 365 on-site, Active Directory, using DirSync and ADF servers for our single sign-on. So we make sure we have single sign-on as well, because it's one less click. Too many clicks, they get lost. The cloud-based platform for us. So the online version of SharePoint allowed our users to access things at home at school, which was really important. They could go wherever, they could be wherever, and they could make use of it. I've been on doing things here with a jet lag and waking up really early and different things and working hard. Not that everybody thinks I am back at school. But Office 365 allows everybody, staff and pupils, to work collaboratively. We work on the same documents. We have groups of students, 10, 12 students working at the same time on one Word document or a PowerPoint, adding to it all the time. We use a lot of OneNote. So a lot of the staff will use OneNote. You'll see an example later on where one member of staff does all of his lessons on OneNote. So there's a OneNote for the whole year for that course. We use a lot of other different things where we try and look at things. We have permission portals which allow groups of users to access the different areas. So we've got a staff portal, a pupil portal and a family portal, and we're going to go live to the portal a little bit later so you can see some of those and how we've done some of that stuff. We are conscious that the use of technology must provide us with something. So we want it to make sure that it brings data to the surface so it supports our staff. We have the planning bank that I touched on where we have to upload our lessons. We have subject sites where we can monitor at the subject level the delivery of what we call our RAP, our Raising Achievement Plan, which we formulate every year of how we're going to improve things and do things. We have a leadership portal, which I'm part of the senior leadership team, where we make sure we maintain a clear sense of direction. And some of the stuff that's coming online now is going to make a big difference in those portals because they're very flat at the moment, I suppose, and the introduction of Yammer and stuff like that's going to make a big difference to us. And then we use something called Pivot. I'm not sure if some of you will see it, but we'll have a screen in a moment, which makes the data tactile for us. So we've been an advocate in the UK of the Microsoft Research Labs Pivot, where you can import data and it shows you little graphs and there's a picture within each one. So each of the students get put into a different place depending on how they're doing within the academy. So it would look something like this. So the students, you can do it by class. You can do it by how many are achieving C grades, how many are hitting their targets, how many are missing, and it changes the bar charts for everything you want to look at. So we make sure that we make the data tactile for our staff so that they can see it. They can see who then they've got to focus on, where intervention's needed, and how things can go. We make sure that when we're using the technology that we monitor and assess the impact of it. So everything has got to be integrated. It can't be a bolt-on for us. We've been very clear in our statements with that. So it has to be integrated into our academy's monitoring schedule. There's got to be a qualitative and quantitative analysis of our elements of the gateway, our learning technologies. And we need to monitor the impact of the projects that we have. We have a number of projects going on. And then we run a competency model across Key Stage 3, which is our year 7, 8 and 9, so our 11, 12, 13-year-olds, where they spend a lot of time in one class with one member of staff. So we need to make sure that we're able to assess those competencies and make sure that they're hitting everything they need to hit. So technology has become our way in because it doesn't judge the students and it's always there. We felt that was really important because it gives them the confidence really quickly. We get a student in who's never spoken a word of English. You can guarantee that they can find their way around Office even if it's in English, if they've ever used it in another country. So it doesn't judge them, it actually facilitates them. We have an e-learning support team. And I suppose this is possibly quite unique for us. We have 8 or 9 members of staff who help us to deliver our content, help design our content, but they also go to the classroom to make sure that staff can implement it. Being a teacher myself, I love technology, but there's some staff in our school who find technology difficult. So regularly they'll invite people in, some of the e-learning team in, to go and help them deliver that technology. They're not teachers. They're not educators, but they're there to make sure they can help them embed the stuff that we're doing and make use of it. They're there after school to make sure if you need a one-to-one, you can sit with them and have a one-to-one on what you want to do. Quite often we'll go along with ideas and say, this is what we want to do, can we do it? And they'll say, I don't know, but I'll find out for you, and they'll sit down and try for us. And if not, they contact Alex at the moment. We're quite clear on Thinkerlink. So we use a lot of Microsoft products, as I said. OneNote's really big. We use Kodu for basic coding, and we're using that with some elementary primary school students at the moment. They come to our school twice a week. We have a couple of teachers who work with them, and we're embedding that into our computer science. Touch Develop's just coming online in the UK, and we've been piloting that with Microsoft to make sure that works. And then there's our Office 365. We need to deliver them through the themes that we have. And we have something called a Focus Day and Achievement Week. So we collapse timetables and we integrate things and they do things for 5 hours at a time, which is really good for those sort of in-depth projects. So technology is our way in to support continuous improvement because it doesn't judge, they start to improve continuously. They get their confidence, they see where they want to go, they see what they want to do. So this is our old learning gateway, as we called it, quite cluttered. When you look at the newer one, you can see there's a lot on there. Fairly basic things from SharePoint. We do a bit of theming with it, obviously. In 2011-12, before we moved and before our analytics are yet to click in for our new gateway, we had 2.5 million hits across the gateway. And that's from 1,000 students, 200 staff, and approximately 500 parents. So we make it heavy. We drive everything through it. If a student says to me, where can I find this? I'll tell them it's on our learning gateway. I'll say, go look, then come back and tell me you can't find it. And the new search facilities that we're using are obviously helping with that a lot. How's that look in a graph? You can see there we hit spikes in January and in March there with 80,000 hits. It tails off around our breaks, so around Easter, around Christmas, as you'd expect, around the summer when students haven't started new classes, we get a bit of a dip. Although we still have parents still accessing it, see what's going on. So it's been good for them. So I'd like to hand over to Alex for about the migration story.
Cheers. So just to give you a bit of a brief of what we did, we were approached, there was a tender that went out from the school to move from this private cloud of SharePoint 2007 to latest and greatest, which was 2010 at the time. So we looked and we thought Office 365 was the route to going. It would save the school money in the long run. And at the time, the licensing model was going to cost the school about £100,000 per year, so $120,000, $130,000. Having known that, kind of under a bit of an agreement with Microsoft, that actually it was going to be coming free the following week, I had to submit my tender saying it's going to cost you this amount. And the following week, I resubmitted it and saying it's now going to be £100,000 cheaper for you. So I think the cost save in that instantly just goes brilliant. And I think because it's an ever-changing platform, it's saving the school money going forward. And we'll talk about some of that from a 2010 to 2013 point of view and some of the things that we did to make it so much easier. So we had estimates of how big the data were. We didn't know actually how big what was actually going to be migrated to COTS. We could get mailbox information, but because of the way the environment was set up in 2007 and expanded to 150 schools, we didn't know what schools were still on there because it was now being managed by somebody else. It was all one in one big database. What do we do? How can we quantify what has been migrated? How do we know exact number of kilobytes have been migrated? And that's just some of the difficulties that we had, which is why it was about a terabyte of data. We did 400 gigs worth of mailbox content. I went from a gig mailbox to 25 as it was at the time, now up to 50 gig. And we migrated about 600 gigs worth of content from a SharePoint. As I mentioned, it was one site collection, so one collection of sites. Because of that data and that quota, we had to split that up. So we tried to think, well, how can we split this up? And we made some recommendations and we went to 28. This was normally based on stakeholder or how big particular sections were. I've got a bit of a map to show you that in a bit. So three sections that we had to migrate. We had the identity area, we had the exchange, so as it said, the mailbox that was to be moved over, and also where all the content was, the sites, where the collaboration, where the students were learning, where they were pulling all their information from a SharePoint point of view. So the timeline. So we won the project in about April time of 2012. And the first things first, and I say this to anybody, get your identity right first. It's the key thing. It's what's going to get you into your email, into your SharePoint. You haven't got that right, you're going to have difficulties getting into everything else. So we got that implemented in there, and we started working on the Exchange migration, doing testing and that part. We then did some SharePoint migration testing. So we went through, made sure that what we were migrating was going to work. We did some incremental migrations. We'll go into the details what that actually meant and how that benefited the school. And then we did the live migration and everything went live September from a SharePoint point of view, 8 months ago? So the identity. Why am I talking about identity migration? Well, at the time, the students had two separate usernames, one to log on to their computer with and another to log into the learning gateway, which caused a bit of frustration. It was a different naming scheme. It had to be, you could do your own naming scheme within the school, or this was a different naming scheme when you've got 150 schools. So it's got to be able to fit into the scenario that was based at the time. So is that example that we've got there for Ryan Guest, who's one of the colleagues at the school and working with them. He had those two. Kind of is a bit frustrating. He's got to have two different password policies. So we're able to migration, and the migration tool allowed us to be able to match those users and the permissions as they came across. We put single sign-in. And it also helped improve some of the administrative time, obviously, if you're not managing two identity solutions. It's a lot easier. User's created once, and then it's automatically synced up to Office 365. So the first thing we wanted to do was actually make it so there's a sense of ownership when you arrive at the logon screen. And I was going to flick over to my laptop just to show you this. What the students do, they normally search. They're not going to remember a big, complicated, long URL. They'll probably go to Bing or a search engine, say Shireland. Then it comes to the website, and then they know full well that they can get easily go to the different sections. And we've got quite a few links, so they can go directly to the staff portal or the student portal. A bit of information here about the gateway. You see some screenshots, which you'll see in a little while. But I can click on here, go to the student portal, and we've got a branded area. So it's that sense of ownership, and you know that you are logging on to the area that is right for you. Shireland, you've seen the background and the logo. And the school can change this logo, the background, should they want to, for sports day or something that's going on, so it can actually be a bit more fun to be able to do that. So as you can see, there's a few things I've just mentioned, the ability to be able to communicate with the staff on what they're doing. And of course, they needed to understand that there was a change in username and password. And how do you tell students who don't always check their email or trying to get the word out? So there's a good bit of instruction there. Log on with your RM network, as it is, to be able to log in. So they actually got that information there. And all I have to do is put their username and password in. So email migration. We use the built-in migration tools that are built into Office 365 to be able to pull out the information from the Exchange 2007 as it was. There's three main ways you can do the migration, and we wanted to make it cost-effective for the school. We didn't want to be using third-party tools. So straight away we're going, well, what can we do with Exchange Online migration? And exactly what we did, we pulled that information and we were able to match those usernames coming across between the two environments. As I said, we've got those additional features for the users, so now when they open up Outlook or when they go directly on their domain PCs, they log straight into their email. They don't have to authenticate again. And again, that helps the schools so they don't have to actually manage two email systems. So the SharePoint migration and permission has been granted. I can actually talk about these, which I'm pleased about, because we decided to use MetaVis. It wasn't a school decision. We were charged to do the migration. So we went, well, what's the right fit for us? What do we want to do from a migration point of view? And we really thought, kind of, we went out, we talked with the different vendors and went, what really suits us? We need to be able to do particular things. As you can see, some of these are actually on the screen. Around the, actually, we need to be able to migrate, as we said, from one site collection to multiple site collections. We need to be able to elevate sites. We need to be able to copy the permissions, as I said, with different naming formats. So our guest here is actually Ryan.guest over here, so that ability to be able to do that. And also being able to do a migration, an incremental migration. And what I actually mean by that is being able to do, literally, copy everything now, and kind of we can test it, we can know where we are, and then it just copies those little bits over that have changed since. Similar to an incremental backup, if you understand that kind of terminology. But certainly it kind of helped, so when we did migration, we're not going, right, we're going live tomorrow, let's migrate 600 gig to Office 365 now. No. It was just kind of, we're just copying over a couple of meg per area, and it really helped to do a quick live switch over for the school. So we did have a few issues, and I'm going to be quite honest with you with some of these, and some of them were caused by the platform. So we had to split it up. So we had to go through, we had to go, well, okay, how does this actually work? So we asked for a sitemap. And this was the sitemap, and I'm sorry it's a bit small, but it's kind of, it was printed, it was huge, kind of as it actually comes out. And actually, when we looked at this, this was actually a navigation map, not necessarily a sitemap. So it actually said, well, can you actually get to this area and move this bit to here? And kind of go, we can't find it. Well, we had to navigate through all this to be able to get to it and actually really understand where that structure was. And because we moved from one site collection to 28, it really gave us the opportunity to actually really set it out in a nice structured way to be able to do it. So we sat there, we highlighted, well, that area's got 60 gig, and at the time we know that's going to be getting bigger and bigger, so that's a separate site collection and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I apologise it's a bit small when it looks a bit blurred, but it's a big image. A couple of other areas that we had, safe control. What kind of what introduced in SharePoint 2010 was this ability to be able to put code in wherever you want using the content editor web part, JavaScript, and in 2010, you had the ability to be able to have like a save control. If it didn't like it, you couldn't save the page. It would rip it all out. If you had that on-prem, you were able to turn that control off. Obviously, you can't do that in Office 365. So we're migrating pages over, and every single one's failing. I'm going, no, these can't fail. It's far too much work. So we ended up having to redesign and rebuild about 200 pages. And a real compliment to the team that they were very patient with that and understood it. Actually, this is a real pain ache. But it's just one of those things. Microsoft want you to be in a safe environment in Office 365. So they've got this, well, they've got these safe control that protects them and the platform and other customers, but also yourself to make sure that you're doing it correctly. And also the back end and upgrades. What I actually mean by this is that things change. We know that 2013 started being rolled out into Office 365 beginning of last year. But jumping back to our roadmap, halfway through the period of actually testing the migration, all of a sudden it just stopped working. I'm getting 100% success rate, and then I'm getting like 20%. I'm thinking, hang on a minute, what's wrong with the migration tool? What's going on here? But the back end, the upgrade had actually happened between 14 and 15, and the APIs have been updated. And I go, no, it's not working. And I've got a meeting next week, and what is it? I need to be able to demonstrate more stuff. So we had to be a bit patient, and the compliments to the school, they were really patient with us while we had to wait for MetaViz to get up to date. And over time, it will work. We still hit the goals that we wanted to be able to go along for September. So there's a bit more information around it. One of the things the school used to be able to measure with the different departments is around KPIs. So the KPI functionality, that template that was there in 2010, disappeared in 2013. So all of a sudden we go, well, hang on a minute, why is this not great? Well, actually, we need to go back and research the documentation to tell us actually KPIs are different, and we needed to build a solution that would do that and obviously be able to migrate into that. And we decided to stay in 2010 until the right time, and 2013 came along, and we'll go into that. So branding, you saw that first image of what it was like in 2007, heavily customized, big branding, and when we sat down and had that initial conversations before we went to tender, how many master pages have you got? And we were told three. They were right, they had three, but they had about 50 different names for them. So for the blank one, which you'll see, had like five different names. It was basic, basic two, blank, blank two, and another one. They kind of go, well, hang on a minute, all of a sudden we're coming to match all these amalgamations of master pages to make it look so it becomes one. Now we have three, the same as what they had beforehand. And it was important that we actually tried to make a structure on how it's going to be easy to upgrade these when the platform upgrades. So we sat down with the team and we said, right, banner's always going to be in this location within the site. The CSS is always going to be in this location, and this is always going to be in it. So when we upgrade, we literally copy over the master page, and that's it. No restyling. It literally is migrate the site collection, copy over a file, make sure it's published and approved, and there it is. We're now upgraded, and we're in the next site collection. And we've done that over the last 6 weeks, and it's been really hugely successful, and as far as I'm aware, I don't think any of the teachers have noticed, have they? Yeah. They're excited to get the new features, but at least then, kind of, it's really simple for them to be able to do it. So here's the timeline. We got our 2013 upgrade notification 4 weeks. This is during the summer holidays. It's kind of, right, okay, what should we do this? We're 2 weeks into the winter term, and all of a sudden we're getting to get the upgrade on the 17th of September. What should we do? And some of the things we'll go into is the class sites. People were going live, we were on 2010, people were using it, but we kind of delayed a couple of things because we knew this date was coming along. And this is around the class sites, which we'll go into in a minute. So what we've done since the migration, it's been a real privilege to be able to work with the school on the migration, but now we're pleased that we're going to be working with them over the coming years to move things forward, and we've already been doing that from a 2010 to a 2013 point of view. So talk about three main features that we've really gone through. Obviously, the upgrade process moving over. And as of today, we've got three site collections which were still in 2010. We've kind of just evaluated which are the right ones to go along now and what are the right ones to go in the future based on student impact. Timetable classes for students and for teachers to be able to use in the classroom. And also parental access and be able to get parents access into Office 365. So, as I said, we waited for some of the areas for SharePoint 2013 to come along. And on day one, we upgraded some features. They wanted SkyDrive Pro. That was important for them at the time. Of course, now it's OneDrive for business. And kind of we wanted that. We wanted the office web apps as some of the real key things. That's why, you know what, day one, we're upgrading it. We upgraded the search area and a few others as well. What we also did was made sure that we prepared for, in another environment, all the things that they wanted to do on day one. So this class site template, which you'll see in a minute, was designed in another tenancy that was in 2013. So we literally go, right, it's the 17th of September, bam, what are we doing today? Well, we know what we're doing because we prepared it, we've tested it, let's go with it. So one of the things that we actually said, well, actually, between the 2010 being the top image here and 2013 the bottom, is that some kind of common navigation. People like, I always miss kind of in the 2010 that we couldn't get to email very easily. So we actually built it very simply into the master page, that top part that you see within 2013, so they can easily get to Outlook, to their calendar, the people, so there's actually that commonality across the different site collections, no matter what it was. The timetable classes is a solution which we got in. Which looks at the school's timetable system, and I've got a bit of a flow to go here. So it looks at the school MIS and the timetable system. It extracts the information that it needs to into the provisioning server. This then goes off in queries and gets all the information from Active Directory, to the user's point of view, and actually sends them up and creates SharePoint sites per timetable class. Adds the permissions of the students into there. So when the students log in, they see 8 classes of their English, history, math, science. The teacher would log in and they'll see all their history lessons that are there. I log in the administrator and see all 800 classes. So, new site is provisioned, it's updated, student leaves a group, they leaves a timetable class in the MIS, it ultimately get added into the other area. So in total we've got 751 classes in there, but we've also, the school use it as an additional for things like after school clubs, and other areas of the group, so this actually becomes a really good collaboration area. And to show you this, I think Alan's going to talk about it.
Yeah, so this is an example of one of our class sites, and there's just a few bits I've picked out that we're using on here. So you've got direct access to create a OneNote notebook, which we use a lot. You've got access to community groups for discussions. We've got what we call a drop-off library, which is just an area where students can upload assignments. And when they upload them, the member of staff sees the whole group's assignments, the student just sees what they've uploaded. Staff can look at it, they can mark it, they can send it back, they can put comments on it, you know, whatever they want to do with it, so that the students can get it. Then we've got access to shared areas, calendars and announcements, and on this particular class site, this member of staff uses their calendar to actually put their lessons up. So they click on it and they go straight to the link. Some staff use it slightly differently, as we'll look at in just a minute. So we've got that particular stuff. On this side, we've got something that we're using called flipped homework. And we'll go into that in a bit more. You've got follow a site. So if a student finds another site they like that they're not actually timetabled for, so for example, it might be an after-school football club, and we've built a site for that. They can go follow that site, and it appears in their My Sites for themselves. We've got trending discussions that are going on and discussion topics, so that the students can click into them, they can have a conversation with other students and socially interact with each other. It notifies the member of staff, so the member of staff can answer back if they want. The student can write on there and say, okay, I don't actually understand my homework that you've given me from this, and we can go into it and we can make use of it. I suppose some staff will say I'm on it 24/7, so I might be at home and I get it and I answer it, which, you know, it depends how you're willing to work and how you're willing to do things. So we've got class site calendars, and this contains all the information that a pupil needs to progress with their learning. It includes the lesson objectives, so what they're going to be looking at. It includes their resources, their links, any competency references that we have that we've built in there from our competency tracker. Information for each lesson. We use Walt and Wilf. Walt being we are learning to, Wilf being what I'm looking for. So the students understand the easy language. This is what you're going to be learning to do. This is what I'm looking for as your output. We have a reference there. We've got links to external websites, links to all the resources that they might need. Some would say, right, why don't you go and let them find them themselves using Bing or using Google? You can waste an inordinate amount of time when students are going to look for some of the stuff. Yes, we do let them go, but if we can put it there so they can use it a lot quicker and then move on, it's a lot better for us. Parental access through power is something that Alex has developed for us, so that we can make it work for us.
There's a lot of education suppliers out there who ask the question, when are Microsoft going to add the ability to be able to just give a parent a license? And it's really strange. It came to me in a dream. I literally am being serious. I kind of went to bed Friday night about 12 o'clock in the middle of the night. I woke up and went, I figured it out. This is how we get them out there. And I was like, spent the next 2 hours awake going out there, and the next morning did a proof of concept on an hour. We've got this solution that we built out. So we actually have parents accessing it through the license array, through the partner access license, the PAL. So what we've actually got through this with the schools, we've got 800 parents being able to access it, information. At the moment they've got view, but we've had to do edit rights to be able to do that. And the process behind this, just to give you a brief run out, is actually it's a separate Active Directory Azure tenancy, and the users are created and managed within there. So the family may log on as something like, as you can see, parent.school.com. So they've got that domain that they have to log in as. But what effectively all we're actually doing is we create all those users doing, clicker's not working. We create all our users within the area, and we actually add them to the sharing area within that site that they want to be able to do, and they go into a SharePoint group, and then we can manage that group and where we want it to be able to go. That sends the email off, and we actually capture that email as within the BFC Parental Access Engine, and we emulate the user logging on. And all of a sudden, we're going, well, actually, here you go, parents. Here's your username, here's your password, here's the URL, or go to the school website and they're logging on. So we don't have to worry about finding out what's their Google account, their Hotmail, their Outlook.com, or whatever, and if their email address changes or anything like that, we're actually giving them their username and their password to be able to access it straight in. And then when they've left, we just reset the password and they can't log in anymore, or we just remove it. So the school have got the 400% control behind that.
And I think one of the reasons that we've done it that way is because, as I explained about our intake, if you like, of students and parents, our parents don't very often stick with one mobile phone number or one email address for very long. And we were conscious that if we're sending out these invitations that last for 10 days, we're going to get a lot bouncing back, and we're not going to get the uptake. So we wanted to find a way where we could give them the information that they needed. So then looking at our portal, family portal at the moment, and we've written up there, a device without a learning environment or a context is of limited value, and we feel very much so that it is. So we produce a family portal where the parents can go, they can look at all the things that we've got going on, they can log into something called ePortal, which is our MIS, so they can see how their students, their children are progressing, whether they're on track to hit their grades. It's not stuff, we are not pulling that stuff into SharePoint at the moment. We're leaving that where it is because parents are used to using it, and we're worried a little bit about, I suppose, the security and the sensitivity of that data if we put it up there in SharePoint. We've got to start talking about that and how we work with it. They can look at the curriculum and how it's changing, what's coming up, if they've got options to take for the new year and things for themselves. And we put lots of stuff up there to try and help them. So Help Me Revise, for example, where students have got exams coming up. We often get asked about study skills and how students should revise. So we try and put a lot of information up there. What's coming up, we produce an event, a calendar, and different stuff for them to help them out. So our new learning gateway. The first image up there is of the student portal, as it looks. Very similar, you see a similar feel. You see the Metro style, I suppose, Windows 8 feel to it, so that the students know when they're using Windows 8 that they can click on that and it will go somewhere. And that things will happen for them. We put all our information up there and they go to it. They go to it every lesson. When they walk in, they log on straight away. They'll go to their class site. They'll look at what they've got to do. Everything is driven through that for them. And we still use other tools, but we have to make them integrate with what we've got. So we're obviously very centered on the fact that this must work for us in the way that we want it to work. We've got subject and services sites. So we don't just do it from the student perspective. We also do it from our own perspective as staff, our HR sites up there. There's a finance site up there. There's support services for students and for staff that we have up there so that we fully integrate everybody. We encompass everybody within our organisation of having access to it. And HMI, which is Her Majesty's Service Inspectorate, described these as the best sharing and monitoring and shaping structure that they'd ever seen in a school. So we're pretty proud of it, and so we go along and we talk to other people about it and try and help them get to the same stage that we are. It's important for us that everybody has that access, and can't stress that enough for us. That stopped working. Class sites and flipped learning. Every outstanding lesson, so every lesson when they come in is judged, when they come and talk to us, Ofsted. Every lesson that was judged as outstanding was using technology well. It was the mainstay of the lesson. It allowed the inspector to come in, as they only stay for half an hour out of an hour's lesson in general, they got to get a very quick flavour, and they can get that from what we're showing. And the students can very quickly show the class site and where they started, where they're going to, what they're doing, and it's all very much shared with them. And we use this flipped learning idea, where we send it home to the students, we send it to them, they do it, then we adapt what we're going to do the next day. So it might be a video based around World War II, for example. And a student will go home and they'll watch the video, and it'll hopefully set a number of questions off in their mind. So they get on the discussion forum, they start typing and saying, "Oh, hey, sir, I don't understand this bit, why did that happen?" So the teacher then, in that 2 hours that they're not sleeping, will sit down and they will alter their lesson for the next time they have them. It could be the next day, it could be the next week, it depends. But they spend a lot of time as staff looking at that and trying to work with that. And it's something we've pushed a lot this year in what we're doing. And I know flipped learning's been around in the States for a while, so we've just been looking at it and trying to adapt it and make it work our way. I said we had a diverse population. We've got roughly 600 Muslims within our school. So we create a celebrating faith site. So when they go and they want to celebrate Eid, for example, that's a normal school day for us. So they will take a couple of days off. But what we've said to them is, if you go and access the Celebrating Faith site and you do a bit of work on there in the morning and some work on there in the afternoon, we're able to accredit you with an attendance. Because you've created some work, we've got a record of it, we've got date and timestamp of when you've been on, how long you've spent on there, what you've done, and we can look at the work that you've submitted. So we've made sure that we've made use of that so that they can get some things done. It also allows other students to go on and have a look. You know, we've got 56 different languages, we've got a number of different faiths. Some students need to learn and understand faith, and you don't always have enough time to go through them all for them when they're in those lessons. It gives us, which doesn't seem much, but 0.7% saving in attendance. And when you're being judged on how well your attendance is like, it's really important. So we manage now to keep around 96% to 98% attendance for the whole year, throughout the whole school. And we're not prepared to lose that 0.7. For the days of Eid or other things that students want to celebrate. And it supports the community cohesion. I'm sure you can imagine with the amount of different intake students that we have, community cohesion can sometimes be a little bit fractious, a little bit difficult. So we try and make sure we support that community cohesion for them. Thanks. Evidencing progress for us. So we evidence to everyone through all of our portals. So we have an exemplification site where a student can go and find, what does an A-grade essay look like in English when I'm studying Shakespeare? What does, how can I revise? What's my help me revise site like? What's a resources site? So that's giving them access to everything based around their subject. So IT, for example, they can go in, they can access everything that relates to them, but they also have access to all of the future years if they're a younger student. So look at the resources. If they want to go on and they want to learn things or have a look at things that they might be studying later on that year, later on in 3 years' time, for example, they can go and access some of the material and have a look at it. So they can learn a little bit through discovery in that way instead of always being taught by us. The class sites we've talked about, Further Your Maths site, for example, is allowing students to look at A-level maths, as we would call it, which is just before university, to allow them to increase their knowledge and see where they go from there. Okay?
Demo time?
Yeah. So, I think probably what we'll do now, and then go back to some stuff in a minute, start to show you a little bit how our portal actually looks, and a little bit of look and feel of it. So, staff portal. They're all very similar, and all fairly straightforward in what we do with them. We've got the tiles there, so you can see a number of different things that we can click on and move to. We've got a calendar, we've got announcements, we've got things coming up about National Careers Week, so that we keep things in the staff's forefront of their mind so they can see things. They're quite easily recognisable because we keep a similar colour scheme throughout them all. So this one is the staff portal with the SP, and it has its red colours. Along the bottom is always our things that we stand by, see further, promoting cohesion, aiming higher, be concerned, leading learning, changing attitudes. They're all the things that we stand by and we work on themes with through the students. We've got a student portal, again. You can see the colour changes there, so they know that that relates to them. We've got something around the Wizard of Oz coming up for us. We've got their careers week, so we start to duplicate things, so it becomes at the forefront of their mind, so they can follow things. We've got calendars there. They've got smash up badminton happening, for example. That's an after school activity rather than a lesson. And you can see there that if they follow through, there's a whole load of things that they can look at, which gives them access. So we've got the resources, information, past projects that we do. You can get to the family portal from here. So if for some reason a parent hasn't got their log on, if a student logs on, they can still get there to help their parents out. So we give them a number of different routes in. A list of class sites. This is Alex.
This is the 800 list.
The 800 list, class site. As you can see there. Which if a student's got to go through and find, that's pretty hard going. So we don't actually allow all the students to see all of those. Then we've got something called Literacy for Life. So you can see at the moment, this is there's a couple of teachers that are teaching in there, and their current topic's made in China. So
this is one of the class sites, isn't it?
Yeah, class sites. So she's gone in and put something that's relevant to made in China at the moment. She's used a graphic to try and encourage the students to come in and work with that. She doesn't use her calendar in this particular one in the same way as some of the other staff do. So we do have a different varying uptake between staff, and I think that's important. And I think that the fact that we use it in different ways is also good for the students, because if you're always the same way, they do get turned off. So as we look through these, you'll see some that are slightly different. So this one, for example, got the photos of the students in their particular class rolling through. What affects growth? We've got the categories down here about these are the different themes that we follow. Citizen me, they're currently doing growing at the moment. They've done journeys, they've done planets, and all their lessons will be themed around that within that competency for them. This particular member of staff also looks at Glogster and uses Glogster EU, so we allow them to embed things in there for themselves, so they develop it. It's up to them where, in a way, they want to take it. So we'll probably have a group of advanced users within the school that we'll meet with, and we'll talk to them about how they're developing things. We'll have an intermediate group of users, and we'll have the novice group, if you like. Generally, new staff who come in the September intake will join that group, and we'll sit down and talk to them about what it is. I remember when I joined 3 years ago, I'd never met SharePoint in my life, so it was an interesting immersion into how it all works, and it does change your way of teaching quite easily. Business studies, case in point, and we mentioned the notebook, and this is the example of this. So you can see here, obviously, they've got a quote, they've got some stuff there, an empty calendar, which if I'm going to look at it, which I have to do, and look at some of these class sites, it concerns me. But they don't have an empty calendar if you click on the notebook. So I'm just going to go live to that notebook now.
I think it's one of the things that it's worth mentioning that we actually did 2 or 3 training sessions with the teachers, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We
split
spent a
them
time.
Out, and they kind of stated the where they felt that they were from the mobility point of view, and then we train them and we kind of agree, and so they've got those different advanced steps. Should they want to know more, we all do kind of assume that you know this and we're going to teach you this. And we did that on 2 or 3 different levels.
Yeah, so and this member of staff's really embraced the OneNote usage for themselves, and they've you can see they're building their lessons. You've got exemplar student work in here. You've got setting budgets. You've got all of their lessons that they've been planning, and they've got mock exam stuff. So instead of using the exemplification site, this member of staff's embedded some of that student work there to say, this is what is good, this is what we should do. But it's, yes, sir?
So your students are better to support
Yes, yeah, they do.
So how do you handle
provisioning? For the sites. We provision based on our management information system. So the student has to be a member of that class to be able to get access to that class site.
It's automatically done. Some of that technology we were talking about earlier on, where it pulls it out, uses that provisioning server to query the users, pulls them from AD, and then automatically creates those sites, gives them the permission, so they only see the sites that are actually relevant to them, because that's what their timetable is.
And it also does that for members of staff as well. So when I log on, I've got, I think, 3 classes this year. It only shows me the 3 sites that I need, although I get access to more for different stuff that I do. This member of staff also last year created a OneNote notebook with a separate page for each student that they then password permission so only that student could see it. And they would then answer different things, write what they had to do to improve it on their work and move along in that way. So he's really embraced this sort of thing and takes it on. It's the business department. He enjoys it. He moves it with his whole department on moving things along like that. That's a copy of that one. Then there's our family portal, as we've shown you already. We're already talking about the Wizard of Oz production that we've got coming up and various different things that the parents can use. We advocate the use of Twitter within the school. You can follow a department through Twitter because they've got their things. I've got a Twitter account that's personal to me, but I've also got a Twitter account at school as well. And so we keep those quite separate and we make use of that. The student portal we've had a look at. We make sure that everything's kept fresh, and that team, that e-learning team, helps us to keep things fresh and things that we need to put up there so that they can know what they're doing. Year 11 English study support, for example, is coming up shortly. This is one of our resource sites. So it's this is the list view of the resource sites. You can see the things that are there. And this is a Key Stage 4 one. It's our, you said it was our IT one?
It is IT,
IT
yeah.
one. And you can see there we've got Bill Gates leaving up there for them. And
that's video content that you've purchased and is now available for students to be able to get on here.
So we look at how we can offer things for students, and we want to, I think, as we develop this further, tidy it up a little bit so that the students have a better experience of seeing it. But down there, some of the other links that we use, the resources, Britannica Encyclopedia, albeit the digital version. We upload some of the textbooks for students as well, so we make them available. And we were watching someone yesterday who does exactly the same. We sometimes break them down as chapter, though, so we make it relevant to the course that they're studying if there's a particular chapter. So, for example, say I'm teaching Unit 2, I'll upload with a Unit 2 chapter to my class site, and somebody else will upload the different chapter to their site. This is our Year 7 portal. Each year group has its own portal, so they know, they can collaborate with each other. They can have a look at different things like accelerated reader that they've got. We have an e-safety site. Obviously, it's something we want to make
That's
sure
open
that,
on the next tab.
That we push with the students. And this is in the process of being updated. I saw the new version just before I left, but we haven't made it go live yet. But we have eSafety, and we've made all of these tiles live for students to go and look at so they can learn. And we make sure that we duplicate that for parents as well so that they can go and have a look at it and see what it means to them so they can understand what eSafety is. There's so many parents out there that still don't understand what it is and what it's like to share things and what can happen if things go wrong. So we do a lot of work with parents. We do a lot of work with parents on a Saturday. We have a Saturday school where students will come in and they'll be able to have the chance of learning extra English if they've been struggling with their English. We also invite the parents to come in and we'll teach them English. Flip side is we also offer Arabic, Urdu and everything else on a Saturday as well so that the students can come in and feel part of a community. And there's nothing worse than moving somewhere where you don't know anyone. So we try and create that community, involve everybody to come into our academy so that they can enjoy the things that we do and help them. This is an idea of our planning bank. As a member of staff, we have to go here, we have to upload the planning, and you can see there that for Spring 2, these are old ones, these are 2010 ones, but you can see that they're there. If you click on that, you can go in by subject, see who's uploaded a plan, what it's like. So it actually becomes a bank that we can use. There's no point sometimes in reinventing the wheel all the time. If somebody's created a lesson on Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, why should someone else go and do it again? They might want to change it and adapt it and make sure they differentiate it for their particular group, but there seems very little point in making sure that you've got to do everything all over again for them. And then, as I said, if you click into it, this is what you get. So you get art, for example. We know that this art member of staff uploaded 3 lessons, and you can see them there. So she uploaded a Year 7 one, a Year 8 one, and a Year 9 one for that particular year. And we do talk to the staff about whether they upload a series of lessons for the same group so you can see progression, which from my management point of view is quite good, or whether we make sure that they change the groups that they're doing. And sometimes, depending on how the member of staff's doing, we'll dictate a little bit about what they should do and how they should do it.
Cool.
Go back. So we've covered that part. For us, ownership makes a real difference. So when we decided to go one-to-one, that's when we found that students actually looked after everything that we have. We spend a lot of money on technology, we spend a lot of money on getting devices in. And we're heading to that one-to-one stage. We're probably a year, 18 months off being one-to-one with everybody. And we're then hoping that that will have another significant change. Our first year, if you like, year sevens, eight and nines all have one-to-one devices. They don't take them home. Which is why we're saying it's important they're able to access things at home. We make them stay in school so that we've got them every day, because there's certain students who don't come with them at all, and you find it hard to get them back in. But we make sure they stay there, we make sure they're charged, they go into a trolley and they're looked after, and everything works from there. But it's their device, they're in charge of it, they come in and out every day, they grab it, they take it to their other lessons. If I have a year seven IT group, they'll bring their laptop to me, rather than me have to go up to their classroom, depending on where I am. We have a number of fixed devices. We have a Mac suite where we do different things with, and we have to make sure that everything runs on everything that we've got, as we've said before. So our concerns, I suppose, were our teaching and learning, with our e-learning, our assessment for learning, and our flipped learning, were starting to outweigh some of the structures and processes that we had, and we're finding a bit of an imbalance. So we said that technology's got to make that balance for us. So everything that we do from now on with our Office 365 is the technology is going to balance everything out. We must make sure that we get a good balance of everything that we have and we're able to drive it forward for ourselves. So as we said, technology is our way in. It doesn't judge, which was what we started with, and it's always there. But if it isn't, it's a problem. We've only had one occasion this year when something changed. And things
Office 365 changed.
Something went a little bit wrong, and it's like the world's ended in our school at the moment if something goes wrong, because the staff are like, well, I have my lessons on there, everything's on there, that's all done with this and that's all done with that, and what do I do from here? And we've had a couple of days where the internet's been down for short periods, but you become dependent on it a little bit, and it doesn't mean we can't teach without it, but it just means that we've got to be careful with it. So what's next for us? We are looking to integrate Yammer. Yammer's been with us already. Staff use Yammer. It's there for the students, we just haven't told them. And it was a little bit of a viral adoption to it. One of the e-learning guys sent me an invitation, and so I accepted, and I sent it on to someone else, and within half an hour we had 90 staff involved in the Yammer network, which was quite nice. It was quite good. It's worked quite well. It scared our executive principal a little bit because he was a bit concerned about what it all meant, how it worked, and so we've been looking at that. We want to expand our use of Link. I was just discussing that earlier before we started, how we can expand that use of Link and making some contacts and some partnerships with some other schools so that we can make sure we make good use of Link, and we can see that that works. We want to make further use of the Office Store and the Windows Store. We've got a big discussion when I get back about the Office Store and what we can use, and there's things like, for example, the prayer app that we can put on our Celebrating Faith site so the students know when they've got to pray, because some of them are a little bit forgetful. It also helps as a staff as well, because I don't keep that in my head. It's not something I always look at. We want to use the quote of the week, for example, so students, when they log onto a class site, the starter might be, read the quote of the week, what do you think, what should we go with, where should we go with that in the lesson. We want to have a look at, I found one that's employee of the week, employee of the month. Can we change that to be student of the week, student of the month, and update it so that the students start to get a bit of recognition on their own class sites? And whether we roll that out further onto the whole school, we're not sure. We're using some of the Windows Store apps, although we're working on a solution about how we can push that out. I mean, I'm guessing most of you are educators, so we image the machines before we give them out to the students. We've hit on the problem that you can only install one app 81 times using one account with Windows 8.1, so that causes a problem when we're imaging 170 machines, so we're trying to work on a solution with that. We're talking with Microsoft about how that might happen. We want to continue our branding. We want to start changing things a little bit, and I think I was having a chat with one of the vendors in the expo hall about live tiles, for example, and how that might be able to develop what we have. It's a little bit one-dimensional, our class sites at the moment. We'd like to make it a little bit more interactive for them. We'd like to be able to embed our own content again, which I think is important, because we had an LMS set up where we were using a lot of school material. We spent a long time developing content that was sold when we had 150 odd schools that now just sits there because we're not able to integrate it into SharePoint at the moment. So we're in talks with a couple of UK companies about how we can integrate that and start developing our own content again so that we can start to make auto-markable things available for the students again so they can see their own progress instantly rather than waiting for that feedback sometimes from the member of staff. We want to refine our content. We don't want it to become unwieldy like the roadmap that Alex showed you earlier on. And I have to hold my hand up, I wasn't there when that was developed. And so it's important for us that we make sure that we get that right. And then lastly, we're a school that wants to become a Midlands e-learning hub. And for us, the Midlands is a bit like one of your states, I suppose. And to do that, we've joined with a number of different things. So we're a Microsoft partner school, as I said earlier. We work with Living Schools Lab, which is a European project. We work with SMART and Stelgess, and we're one of their centres of excellence where we provide training for teachers around the UK. They come to us, they spend a day with us, learning how to use smart technology, embed it into your lessons. We work with RM Books, which is an RM network, and they also run a bookstore, if you like. So we work with them as well, and we were one of their test beds to see how we could integrate that. And we used year seven classes as our test. One was using RM Books and one wasn't. The RM Books group that used it read 50,000 more pages in a month than the group that didn't, because they'd spend 10 minutes going to the library to pick out a book, whereas before they would just sit down. So we're a partner of theirs. International Gifted and Talented Centre, which is with Warwick University, is one of our local top-class universities. We use something where an apps for good school, a ninja school. So it's a good program in the UK that they've developed where a student has to create an app, but it has to be for a good cause, and you go through the whole process of how you develop it. Make Waves, digital badges, a reference site. We use GCSE Pod. We're a teaching school, so this year we had 28 members of staff join us who weren't teachers, who will be a teacher within a year of being with us. They've graduated, they've come in, they've come to work with us. So we work with the National Teaching School to help them do that. And we set up their own sites so they use things. And lastly, the Little Bridges one is really important to us because that delivers our English catch-up. So we've become a lead school with them and managed to do lots of things with them, which has really helped how we go along. Okay. So,
question.
That's a lot about us. It says we've got 7 minutes, 19 seconds left, so happy to take questions off people and see if anybody's got any. And feel free to use the mic or just shout up and see where we go.
If we use the microphone, or we'll repeat the question so anybody who's listening, we can make sure they
sure.
You hear it as well. Yeah, so one of the things we did was when we designed the actual template, we sat down with the school and understood what the different areas that they wanted to be able to have students to have view right, but also rights and the edit permissions. So, for example, they needed to be able to update the discussion board, but they didn't want them changing the calendar where it's got the waltz and the whiff kind of area of what you're trying to learn. You don't want students to be able to do that, and that provisioning tools allows that information to be able to do that.
No, it's led by our management information service with a third-party tool. We can obviously talk about the third-party tool when anyone wants to talk about it, Alex has sorted out.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, and that's how we've done it. You can either do it manually every night, or it can work automatically.
It's worth saying you guys were doing it manually, weren't you?
Yeah, we were.
You used to sit there, print the timetable out, add individual students that they wanted to be able to do. And we found a third-party tool that actually allowed that to do that based on UK MISs to be able to pull that through. So it kind of saved the school. I think it was at least 40 to 60 days worth of manpower during the summertime. And you go, well, that's a no-brainer. There's a question at the back. Previously, so the question was, is that we used to look after 150 schools, and what do we do with those? Actually, as part of what's happened over the years, those schools have gone on into a different system. So this is kind of what Shannon had done, is gone back and really gone, what's really important to us? Yes, we've got those 150 schools, but they've gone off. Let's go back and what's really core
for the school and the delivery of this now, so it's only down to the one school. But with different projects, it may well look like the content is still relevant, so let's provide the content rather than a whole system that has to be supported.
Yes. Is there a ratio of out-of-the-box functionality versus what you get to go with?
So the question being, what's the percentage of or ratio of custom code? At the moment, very, very, very little custom code. And that's what was really important, and we were pleased to see that actually this solution and what they've built over the years is using the out-of-the-box stuff. And they've used the clever things like content editor to change that content. And that's where that safe control that I talked about earlier on was quite difficult, because it kicked a lot of that customization out. So we had to go through a process of that. I think it demonstrates when we talked about the migration that when we migrate, we literally go migrate and we copy the master page over. That's the new solutions that are added, because that's the thing that's changed. So compliment to the school, they've actually really thought, well, how do we keep this as a longitude going forward? How much do we customize? Well, it's not huge amounts, and it shows how much you can actually get done affecting students with out-of-the-box features.
I think if you put that in context, when we've upgraded from 2010 to 2013, some of our upgrades have taken 2 hours.
5 minutes, some of them.
Well, some 5 minutes.
The longest one took 2 hours, the shortest one took about 3 minutes.
So it's allowed us to move really quickly. And I think when you go to Generation Next or SharePoint Next, we'll be able to migrate hopefully as quickly again. Yes? We have the e-learning team. They have a number of different people within that. Some are graphic designers, and they work and produce some of the stuff that we've got. We do lots of projects, so we have lots of things. And so there's about a team of 7 or 8 of them who work on lots of different things and produce stuff for us and refresh the stuff that we've got as we go along.
And then you come to us with the concept design from the actual SharePoint branding site. And then we actually build that for the school.
Anybody else?
Cool.
Yes.
Let me show you this.
I think that was the one thing we've left out, because when I said it broke the other week.
This is the bit that broke.
The bit that broke was this bit. So it's not on our 2013 sites, but it's on our 2010 site. So at the top we have a navigation bar, and that's where the branding comes in really important, and the colours. So the SP, first one being the orange, which is the student one, next one being the staff portal. There's a post-16 portal, 16 to 19 education, which the students can have in. CS for class sites, FP for family portal, GP for governance. So our governors have access to the portal as well, and they can go on and they have their own site. Then we've got the search functionality, and then obviously the email, if you want to connect to it. So that's, we found that really important, and I suppose we missed moving from 2007, we had the breadcrumb trail. And we were able to go backwards and forwards, and it's something we found we missed. And Alex and I have been talking about whether we actually create a back button now to take them back, or take them to the home with a particular portal they're on, so they can navigate that a little bit easier. We've got to find a quicker way of navigation for them, to be honest. Anybody?
Cool. Well, thank you for your time. I think we've got 1 minute 38 seconds left. so we don't get the red light, so I'm pleased about that. So thank you so much for coming along. And thank you for Alan for sharing what the school are doing.
So yeah, we're quite happy to talk to anybody if you want to now after this.
And we're the experts, aren't we?
We'll be at the experts later. I'm not an expert on that sort of stuff. But thank you guys.
Cheers.
Hi there. You're right.
Hi. I'm good.
I want to turn this off.
I'm from Red.